Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Alrighty, hour number two on this Monday. Hope everybody's doing well. CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, the Tiki and Tierney Show. And we're coming to you from our studios, the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. When you need an extra, when you need an expert, to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. This hour, we've got Brian Mitchell who will join us coming up, former Eagle and Redskin. He's actually on the Giants for a year as well, but I guess, I mean, it counts, but it doesn't really count. But good TV guy, get his thoughts on what's happened with the Redskins team name and other off-the-field stuff. This hour, Bryson DeChambeau front and center. And right now, the very, very interesting decision, and it seems like a great one, clearly, by the Kansas City Chiefs to just proactively wrap up the most dynamic young champion that we've seen in the NFL, maybe ever. Mm-hmm. If you think about actually winning the championship that early, already having an MVP on your ledger. You know, Patrick Mahomes is a transcendent figure. He is a steady personality whose dad played pro sports. He's used to the stage. He's not overwhelmed at all. He's a great communicator. He is a steady off-the-field person. He's worth every penny. And what's amazing about this, as it goes through 2031, it's tied into the salary cap.
Yeah.
So this will not need to necessarily be revisited. Not that it can't be revisited, but it will not need to be revisited because it's been viewed as antiquated based on the flowing nature of the salary cap percentage. Win-win. Yeah.
Well, it's a win-win, you know, for now. But the question that I want to have is to see the structure of this. So how much of it is guaranteed? Because that's really all that matters in professional sports. And that's why the Major League Baseball and NBA players have such an advantage over NFL players. Because you can see these massive contracts and it looks, you know, beautiful and, you know, very lucrative on paper. But the only number that you need to look at is the guaranteed number, because that's what you're guaranteed to get. That's what's put in escrow for you by the club, and you're going to get it regardless. So I'm really interested to see this deal. Now, this was first reported by Adam Schefter. A 10-year deal sounds just out of this world, because we've never seen a 10-year deal except for John Gruden with the Oakland then at the time, but now Las Vegas Raiders. But it almost, like with John Gruden, we joked about this, like Mark Davis just wanted to give him a percentage of the company, but he couldn't be a coach and an owner of the team. So he just signed him to a 10-year, $100 million deal, which makes sense. You definitely can't do that with a player. But Pat Mahomes, if you're going to mortgage your future, and there's one player you could do that with in the NFL, there is no question Pat Mahomes is that guy. He has the look. He has the personality. He has the leadership ability. He could go through the stats, but you don't even need to. You just got to watch him play. Mm-hmm. He's an MVP on a regular season. He's a Super Bowl champion and Super Bowl MVP. And by the way, he's only 25 years old, mm-hmm. right? So if you want to look towards keeping a guy on your squad, you know, through his development into his prime and even past it, Pat Mahomes is that guy. The only question I'm going to have, and to this point that you made, BT, about the NFL, about the tie to the salary cap. So presumably it'll be, you know, 13 or 14% of the salary cap, maybe 15. Will be his salary. Right now that puts him about $35 or $37 million. So if the cap goes up, you make $37 million. If the cap goes down, you make $32 million. Mm-hmm. If it explodes up, maybe you make $40 million, and that's great. I wonder if the NFL Players Association will have a problem with this, because if you can only do that for so many players, mm-hmm. right? And if it's not equitable across your entire constituency, how can you allow it for even one? That's the only question I'm going to have, because I've never heard. I mean, have any sports ever tied it to a cap? number? I don't know if it is.
Not to my knowledge, no. Because there is no cap in baseball. The NBA, you know, going back to some of the bigger deals, Kevin Garnett.
But that was just a max number. Those are just max numbers, right?
Well, the Garnett stuff was before.
Max. That's right. That's before
he may, and then A-Rod topped that. I think by a penny or by a dollar. I think it was within that realm, like just barely, symbolically glossed over that or hopped over that. I mean, listen, I'm looking at some of these contracts now. I hear you, and maybe that'll be a deeper discussion down the road, I guess. But you know, I'm not worried about that now. What I am here to say is, you know, whether it's Bryce Harper, some of these recent deals, Bryce 13 years, Stanton 13 years, and Mike Trout's 12, Machado got a decade, so did Joey Votto, Cano, Pujols, Troy Tulowitzki, A-Rod. Yeah. I mean, just Michael Vick got 10 years. Michael Vick got 10 years.
Really?
Vick, that's one we forgot.
I don't remember that deal.
10 years from 05 through 2014, $130 million, 10 years. Jeter had 10 years. A-Rod
had
10 years twice.
But again, how much of that deal was guaranteed for
well, I mean, when you go to jail, nothing's guaranteed.
True.
But I don't know.
I'm going to have to go back and look at that Michael Vick deal because I forgot about that one, to be honest with you.
So did I. And if I didn't look it up, I honestly would. I would not have thought that was 10 years. I would have felt more in the neighborhood of like 7 or 8.
Yep.
The point is, and this is a very simplistic way of looking at it, and I know that there's deeper levels to it, and you just struck one. Maybe it's not all accepting across the league, and maybe there's other things that there's resentment or there's rejection, whatever it might be, or complete recalibration. Maybe there's a Patrick Mahomes rule down the road. I don't know. But what I do know is, again, on the most simplistic level, the best player in the game deserves this money. And any of the other conversation around it to the contrary is something that's fundamentally wrong with football.
Yeah. But
not
I don't even,
Patrick Mahomes.
I don't even know if it's
not
the money.
Chiefs.
I don't even
football.
Know. If, I don't even know if it's the money. Because if you're a Super Bowl champion and you're an MVP, of course you deserve the money. Aaron Rodgers is making as much money. So is Russell Wilson. And eventually somebody else will be making who's not nearly as dynamic. But I think the guy who is inevitably going to become the face of the National Football League deserves a pioneering-like deal. And this is a pioneering-like deal.
Uh-huh.
And why? Because we keep bringing this number relative to the cap. We know the narrative. When you pay your quarterback X percent of the salary cap, it handcuffs you from signing some of your other good players. And if any sport it requires you to have other good players. It's the NFL. Right?
Yes.
You're only as good as that weakest link at one of your most important positions. And so we've seen it, right? We saw it with the Ravens. We've seen it. Hell, even seen it with the Seattle Seahawks, which is a testament to Russell Wilson and their coaching staff. They've been negligent filling in that roster because of what Russell Wilson is making. Same thing can be said to an extent with the Green Bay Packers. But what this allows, depending on what the number looks like and the structure looks like, is for the Kansas City Chiefs to stay viable, even if they are paying their quarterback a significant number and they don't have to worry about it, you know, 2 years down the line. Oh, 2 years down the line, we got to think about how to restructure this. Or, you know, 5 years. I mean, we got this little window. We better try to get another championship here. Otherwise, we got to restructure this thing. So I think it's great, and it's befitting him as a player who's such a pioneering type player.
Listen, I think there will be some that will view it as maybe financially cavalier. Some, not a lot, because most people realize he's worth it, etc. But there'll be some who challenges based on the physical nature of the game, and you just never know, right? And I'm sure there's outs, God forbid injury, whatever it is. But you know, doesn't the fact, and I'm asking you, doesn't the fact that they already won a championship, doesn't that allow them additional freedom to do this? Because now it's not like, you know, like if not that Dak is worth this kind of money, but if Dallas did this with Dak, or you know, in 2 years if the Browns do this, I'm just throwing names out, with Baker, or the Jets do this with Darnold, but those teams don't win, and at this rate they probably won't. Matt Brown's more of a chance than the Jets, but you know what I mean. When you win a championship, shouldn't it create enough distance, enough separation from any of the tractors? Like, hey, we got it. We got it. You could say whatever you want.
True.
We got it.
Yeah, but
now we'll go for number two.
Let's back up to the Baltimore Ravens. And I hate to keep bringing them up, but it's a prime example because they paid Joe Flacco. He bet on himself. I give him a ton of credit. Joe Flacco bet on himself that season, and he went and won a Super Bowl in an improbable fashion. I think they were a six seed, I believe, right? So they went and won
five or six,
right? Yeah. And so they had to pay him. But let me ask you, when the Baltimore Ravens won that Super Bowl, were you thinking, man, this is the beginning of a dynasty, right?
No.
This is the beginning of something that's going to be special in the AFC North and the AFC for the next 5 or 6 years? The answer is no.
No.
And so when they ultimately paid him, it felt like, dude, you're paying for past performance,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's okay, but that's not what this is. This feels like, yes, we just won a Super Bowl, and Pat Mahomes is just MVP and Super Bowl MVP. He's just this dynamic player. Yeah, we're paying for past performance to an extent, but we're also paying for the fact that we're likely to create a dynasty with this guy. So we're projecting, like we're buying low right now as opposed to buying high.
Yep.
As it seems like we tend to do with some of these quarterbacks who perform well. We're buying
yep.
low with Pat Mahomes.
Uh-huh.
Who knows if he's reached his pinnacle yet? You know, I mean, it's inevitable that defenses will catch up, but he just seems like he's the most adaptable player at the quarterback position that we've seen in a really, really long time.
Well,
and unlike Aaron Rodgers,
uh-huh.
When Aaron did it, it feels like Pat's young. You know what I mean? Aaron Rodgers is a little bit older when he started to get that you're the best player at the position in the league. Pat Mahomes kind of feels like that way when he was 24 years old.
There's no way Patrick Mahomes has hit his physical prime.
That's right.
None. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to have another season where he goes for over 50 touchdowns or
mm-hmm.
a touchdown percentage that's almost 9, you know, and an average yard per pass of almost 10, you know, all these things, all these bulge from his incredible, you know, first full season, second season after being drafted, after sitting and watching Alex Smith. That doesn't mean that he's just going to build on those. But, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but to me, the term, you know, in a player's prime was always when the mind and the body was fully in sync.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way the mind becomes fully in sync with the body is to, you know, have some visual repetition.
Yeah.
You don't get that over the course of 1.5 seasons of starts.
Yeah.
So he's going to get better.
Yeah,
he's
going to
see things in 2 years that he didn't see last year.
Yeah.
As great as he is.
They're buying low. It's the best way to put it.
Yep.
You know that this asset is going to appreciate, whereas some of these other big deals that we've seen signed, you didn't know if it was going to, you hoped that it would, but there was a good likelihood that it was going to depreciate and you're going to have to write it off, which is ultimately what happens. Guys say, okay, we're going to cut this thing short. And yeah, it's only 2 years into your 5-year contract, but we need it for financial viability to keep our team, you know, in good standing. So that's Joe Flacco got cut 2 years later or 3 years later, or moved. He didn't get really cut. He got traded, moved 3 years later, and they replaced him with Lamar Jackson. So, It's what happens in sport. This contract seemingly won't happen like that for Pat Mahomes if it's
yeah,
tied to the cap.
I agree. And you know, listen, you know, before the Flacco conversations, we were on the air together.
Yeah.
And those were early debates on our show. And it wasn't like, well, is Joe Flacco one of the best in the game? The debate centered around, is Joe Flacco even worth this big-time extension despite
right.
the championship?
That's right.
And let's be honest, we fluctuated. A lot
right.
of times we were kind of like, not really. He's not that good.
We gave him credit. We gave him credit for betting
sure.
against himself.
Yeah,
and it was kind of like, it's kind of like you had to pay him because he did that.
Yeah.
But there was never a conversation where we were like, yeah, he's top five.
Never even close.
Exactly.
The only conversation, and boy, you would have to get ultra creative to win this debate, was he even on the periphery, like the back end of the top 10?
That's right.
At that point.
That's
let's
right.
be, let's be fair. Let's be
That's
real.
Right.
So, and again, respect to a Super Bowl champ, and, you know, he's now going to back up Darnold. He's going to try to play another
mm-hmm.
year, and a guy who's, you know, seemingly squeezed the most out of his football talent, and you got to respect that. But from a talent point of view, he can't shine Patty Mahomes' shoes. The conversation around Patrick Mahomes is, you know, unlike, is Flacco worth it? The question before today was, is this guy going to be the greatest quarterback of all time?
That's right.
with Patrick Mahomes.
And how much is it going to cost?
Correct.
We hear that Dak Prescott's asking for $40 million. He and the Cowboys are no chance they're coming to that conclusion. Kansas City Chiefs with Pat Mahomes,
uh-huh.
if it's 40 and or 40 plus, it kind of felt like it was going to be worth it, man.
Yeah. Well, look, I want to kick the tires on that a little bit more. By the way, Brian Mitchell, former Eagle, former Redskin, joins us coming up next, does TV in D.C., and get his thoughts on the inevitable name change and what's happened with Haskins this offseason, all football stuff, Carson Wentz, et cetera. Get some Eagles thoughts, too. But what is the roadmap now? Like, how do the Cowboys navigate this? Because if we talk about the listen, he's not in the same stratosphere as Mahomes. We know that. But if the Chiefs are buying early, well, the complete antithesis would be buying late, which is exactly what the Dallas Cowboys are in the process of doing. And when you buy late, it's like trying to buy Apple stock today. It's $375 a share. Good luck.
Good luck. You can buy one or two.
Exactly. Or you know, Alibaba, you know, which took a got thumped early on and has come back nicely. Or Facebook. Like, these things that have just been eventually, I don't know how much higher they could go. But the point is, you know, certain things, you really want to be ahead of the curve. A stock would be one, and a quarterback contract would be the other. What happens with Dak? What do they do? Seriously.
I don't know. I don't. They can't even approach this because they don't have the cap space to do so.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Dak is that guy.
He's not that guy.
You know
not that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know he's not that guy, but I don't know if he is the guy. You know yet. So he's got to win. At the end of the day, you got to win. We just finished.
Can't win, Rock.
But we just finished spending this conversation talking about not polar opposites as far as Pat Mahomes and Joe Flacco. But when you think about Joe Flacco relative to Pat Mahomes, they both won Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. Dak Prescott hasn't even been to the championship game.
Yep.
So it's a different conversation.
It is a totally different conversation. I'm not sure this is the most important. Well, it's not the most important metric, but I think it's an interesting one. Like, if Patrick Mahomes is healthy for the next 10 years, every time the primetime schedule comes out, the Chiefs are going to be minimally three or four times a year, even during lean years, which will eventually occur, just given the atrocious nature of the NFL. The Dallas Cowboys get a ton of national love, but that's because of the star on the helmet and the history and Jerry, not because of Dak.
Yep.
And the Ravens got a ton of love because they had a great defense, a great vibrant fan base, and a cool stadium, and they were always a good team. So, the further quantification of paying a quarterback, like, all right, I know you want to win games and Super Bowls, but you also want to make money and sell jerseys. Mahomes is doing that. Flacco didn't do that at all. Dak is somewhere in between.
Yep, that's exactly right.
It'll
be interesting to see how this affects the rest of the quarterback market going forward.
I hear you, man. All right, good stuff. Good job on the Chiefs, being proactive. Got Brian Mitchell coming up next at 4:40 Eastern. Bryson DeChambeau continues to obliterate courses and act a little childish on him as well. He had an interesting weekend, played great, but that for some was not necessarily the lead story. But Brian Mitchell, some Redskins stuff and some Eagle stuff next. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free lines, 1-855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. So did you know that right now Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com. Learn more. So Tiki and Tierney here on this Monday. Hopefully everybody's well. Tiki and I don't live very far apart. Does it look like it's the end of the world by your crib right now?
Yeah, I thought my backyard was going to turn into a flood zone just about 15 or 20 minutes ago. BT is a little scary, actually, because the wind was flipping through here, too.
Yeah, we have some wind, too. Yeah.
But when it settled down, because now it's just kind of calm raining,
uh-huh.
I was like, dude, I needed this so bad. My yard is getting so brown.
You
just can't water it enough.
It's a battle, man.
Yeah, it is a battle.
It is a battle. And sometimes if you cut it, I always thought, we have the landscapers come once a week.
Yep.
And some of the stuff I'll try to do myself, but it's you get to bring the tractor in. It's only $45, so it's really not a big deal. So I'll have them do it. And when they first started doing it, I'm like, wait, why isn't the grass? You got to make the grass shorter. I'm thinking it's going to be like Yankee Stadium outfield. Yeah. They're like, no, it's actually a misnomer. The shorter you go, the closer the sun gets to the roots, the more damaging it is. It took me 6 months to get that through my thick head. I didn't believe them. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe they just don't want to cut it short. They don't want to work hard. No. I've learned. But even without cutting it too short, it's still there's not too many brown spots because I've been a grass maniac. But I hear you. We can use the rain, so I'm no problem with that. We're supposed to be joined by Brian Mitchell, and hopefully this comes to fruition here the next minute or so. If not, we could punt to tomorrow or the next day. Bryson DeChambeau had a pretty interesting weekend. He's actually had a very amazing golf start to the golf season for him. And I don't want to give too much away, but, I was really thinking about this today. And obviously Tiger is one. But I thought in my lifetime, like I was like, okay, like must watch guys off the tee, right? To me, there's three of them: Tiger Woods, John Daly, and Bryson DeChambeau. That's it.
Yeah, and John Daly did it like he was a swing for the fence guy.
Yep,
you never knew where it was going, right?
Correct.
Tiger Woods, it was because it was just beautiful, majestic, perfect swing that would generate club head speed. And I, obviously, he got bigger as later on in his career before all the injuries took shape. But it was just like this perfect golf swing that would, you know, push the ball 320. But now you see Bryson DeChambeau, and every swing is exactly the same. Like his lead arm is so straight. It's like uncomfortable. And actually, his body is tilted. It's so straight. Even putts that way, by the way. But it keeps him in a perfect line so that all he's got to do is be jacked and swing as hard as he can, and the ball goes 350 yards on the regular, right? I think he averaged 350 in this tournament this past weekend.
He averaged 350. I don't know, but do you think that that's good? I've asked you this, but do you think that that's good for – forget about, again, the DeChambeau
stuff. Good
for
golf? Yes, yeah. I think it's great for golf.
You think
so? Is it good for his body? Probably not, man.
Well, that's no.
Yeah,
there's
like
no way.
Eventually, it's just not sustainable. No. And I remember this, BT, because you know me now, right?
Yeah.
But if you knew me – well, kind of, you did know me when I was still over 200 pounds, right? When I was like 212 and I'm playing, I was just – it's just unsustainable weight for me. Now, he's got 20 pounds on me, and he's probably naturally not too much bigger than I am right now, because I played with him, to BT's point a couple segments ago. I played twice with him at the Valspar Championship, and he wasn't a big, you know, strapping dude. He looked like a normal 25-year-old young man playing golf. Now he looks like a linebacker, and your body just starts to not be able to handle it. You know what I mean? You start to get aches in your ankles, random places like your back and I'm forgetting the nerve there, your IT band that goes down your legs. They start to get tight and your hamstrings get sore and for no reason. So physically, you know, it might feel good right now, but in time, his body's not built to hold that kind of weight. But I think it's great for golf, BT, because we want to watch.
Yeah.
Right? I just kind of tune in to see, all right, what the heck is he going to do now? You know what I mean? How low is he going to go? How far is he going to hit his drive?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he going to even use a 5-iron in this round? And there's lots of events that he's played on where he doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He doesn't have to use his long irons. Not that they're cut any longer. They're all the same size, cut to his 7-iron. But he doesn't use any of his long clubs because he doesn't need to.
He doesn't. It's literally driver, wedge, putter. Driver 9-iron, or 8-iron if it's a par 5. Maybe a 7-iron if he doesn't get it completely on the screw, so it only goes 350 instead of 370. Putter. And, you know, I think it's very good for golf, but I would also caution, and this is the one thing you have to worry about. Like, now that there's a physical, like, well, an element of physics is a better way to say it.
Yeah.
Because he's calculated this down to the number, to the angle, the degree, a velocity point of view, every physical aspect of exertion, he's able to quantify, all right? And
intentional, right? He gained weight physically, jacked up intentionally. It wasn't just because, I'm vain, I want to look big. He's like, I want to, like, hit the ball farther.
Correct. But while I think it's great for the viewing public, for the tour, however long, you know, this circus carnival-like approach on the tee box can land. I say that, you know, from an amazing point of reference, like it's crazy what he does. But however long he can sustain this, it's great. What I worry about, because everything in sport nowadays is trends, right?
Yeah.
There were a couple of the baseball teams that got in on the analytical aspect early. Now, obviously, everybody's involved. But after a while, it was like, oh, wow, we need to catch up and we need to do this. And then, boom, it's uniform. Every team does it. Same with football. Same with the NBA. First, the Warriors were banging in a ton of triples, were trying. Now the Rockets do this. Every night you see each team put up at least 33s, it seems, every night, okay? My concern is that the younger golfer, if DeChambeau's able to do this for a long time, if the younger golfer will now look to replicate this, like they look to replicate Tiger Woods' athleticism, that's why a lot of these kids coming on tour now are yoked. Just type in YouTube golf 1991.
Yeah.
And you'll see, like,
these old guys with khakis, like pulled up, like almost like, you know, not like the old man pulled up, but you know, like the bucket hats, not a muscle.
There was another. Yeah, I know what you.
They look terrible.
I know what you're saying, because there's a kid, and I'm trying to find his name now, who said Eddie Pepperell. He's a European golfer, but he's said the same thing. He's like, I'm going to bulk up like Bryson DeChambeau because he sees how it's helping him. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And the beauty of with Bryson is that it's calculated, right? He's doing this for a reason. He knows he can hit the ball straight, which he seemingly always does.
It's amazing.
Fairways and greens, shots gained, he led the whole way. Which
and putting strokes and gained on the green, too.
It's just not congruent, right? Yeah. You do it that way, it just doesn't. It's not supposed to work that way.
And he could have lost, by the way.
Yes.
The kid Danny Wolf lipped out an eagle on 17.
No,
and
Matt Wolf.
Matt Wolf. I knew that didn't. Matt Wolf, who's going to be a star. Yep. Love that kid. Lipped out an eagle, tapped in birdie, could have got two shots there. And then on 18, Bryson finally hit a good wedge to about 5 feet, put it through center cup.
Yeah.
That could have been a three-shot swing.
It could have.
It could have been.
But let's give Bryson DeChambeau credit. He went birdie, birdie, birdie to end the round, to end his fourth round.
He also chipped one out from, you know, trying to get it back on the fairway, put it out of bounds with a 7-iron.
Yeah, I know. I mean, because he's too strong. Well, he's like, I just want to put this thing right in the middle of the fairway. It goes all the way through. But look, at the end of the day, here's why I like these two guys. And we'll get to more on Bryson in a second because of some of the things he's talking about, which are interesting points.
Yep.
But we'll get to that in a second.
And it extends to all the sports, by the way, not just Bryson.
But
how sports are covered.
You remember, God, when was this, 3 years ago? We started to get on this little bit of a kick about the homogenistic look of every single swing.
Absolutely.
Like every swing looked exactly the same. It's like, all right, here comes, you know, Ricky Fowler. Oh, look at that nice swing. Here comes, you know, Justin Thomas. Looking nice, same exact swing. Here
conveyor
comes,
belt golf.
They all look the same. You could, if you didn't see the guy's face or know his sponsorship or bag or whatever it was, you'd be like, which one of them is that?
Uh-huh.
You go look at Bryson DeChambeau. You are not confusing him for anybody.
Nobody.
You look at Matthew Wolf. Oh. You are not confusing him for anybody because this swing is all, he's got like a hitch at the beginning. He like jerks before he swings.
He does a little dance. It's incredible what he does.
But those two guys have played really good golf over the last couple of weeks. Yep. And so it's like a new wave of golfer.
Yep.
That's not the same. You know, they have these unique, you know, quirks to their game. And I think that's good for golf because you get attracted to it. You're just like, dude, I got that. I have that little hitch in my eyes. I do the same thing. I get like this twitch right before I swing. I don't personally, but someone could. Like, I have this twitch. I can't. It's like involuntary, but it helps me. Like, and Matt Wolf, it helps him.
Yeah. He's a player, that kid.
He really is.
I want to ask a question. I'm not going to answer it now. Don't answer it, Teak. And by no means, please, don't misinterpret. I'm not assigning any sort of blame, guilt. I'm not levying any accusations at all. Please, I couldn't be more abundantly clear than that. I'm honestly not. I'm asking the question. It seems like just very unfair that nobody with any sort of prominence is at least having the most rudimentary part of a conversation about how Bryson DeChambeau got this big. And just don't tell me he's eaten. And very well, that might be it. But we could at least have the conversation. Maybe it's more than three cheeseburgers and a couple of health shakes a day. Because if a baseball player did this, this would not be accepted the way it's accepted with Bryson DeChambeau. And I want to know why there's a little hypocrisy with the sports and the situations, okay? Want to get to that. Also, he berated a cameraman, and he raised some interesting points. I'm not looking to bury him. I love his competitive spirit. He's a great player. He's great for the game. Teak played with him, so Teak could give you some stories coming up. But it was an interesting weekend for Bryson, especially when he expanded on how he was covered during that mini meltdown, if you will, and how that extends to other athletes. All right, so we'll get to all that. We have Marco Belletti's update now. A little more on the Chambeau stuff, which was a good part of the weekend, good part of the sporting weekend. And that is after Marco's update, which is right now. Here he is.
All right, this portion of Teak and Tierney brought to you by Home Depot. With everything you need to do projects smarter, faster, and easier, the Home Depot is here to help. They've got many ways to help. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. All right, so it was a good weekend for Bryson DeChambeau teeing up the golf ball. Not a great weekend for Bryson DeChambeau, at least on Saturday, and you know, the remnants into Sunday as it
made the rounds on social media, et cetera, was discussed quite a bit. I watched some of the Golf Channel pregame show. They did a few segments on that. They referenced it during the broadcast on CBS. Bryson was pounding it, 350 off the tee on the average. Now, I don't know if you even know this, by the way. He broke ShotLink. Mm-hmm. Did you see this one?
Yeah, I did see this.
Well,
you got to explain what ShotLink is.
I will. He broke. It's not like he banged a ball into a some sort of device, but he broke ShotLink because his drives were going so far past the point of what generally registers as a tee shot that they were being calculated as poor approach shots.
Yeah.
Like you're coming up 80 yards, 90 yards short of the green. It's like, ooh, that's a bad second shot. No, that's his first shot. So they broke that. That's pretty funny. At his last seven tournaments, 6-8, third, fourth, second, fifth, and now first. He's playing great. He's a six-time winner on tour. He's got a little charisma, got a little rough around the edges, which is fine. And, you know, whether it's Tiger or John Daly, you got to see this guy crank one off the tee. But let me, we don't need to exhaust this, but I want to ask you the question as a former athlete, right? So let's say a right fielder, any right fielder, plays in the World Series, win or lose, doesn't matter. But they play that baseball season into late October, all right? And then based on the calendar, during a non-pandemic baseball season, pitchers and catchers right around Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. first wave late February or a week after Valentine's Day, and you start to see the reports, so-and-so in the best shape of his career, or Pablo Sandoval, in his case, poor guy, in the worst shape of his career. That picture, yeah. I think he put on 100 pounds. It was rough.
Or at least looked like he did.
Well, I don't think. I mean, he's battled weight issues for a long
time. Yeah, I know. He looked big. But let's not forget, it was a picture taken with a cell phone through the binocular lens. That's how the reporter who took the picture described it.
And yeah, no, Baggerly. He's been on the Giants beat for a long time.
He was upset with the fat shaming that came afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, which is somewhat juvenile, but you are a pro athlete. Get yourself in shape. No. I don't have a ton of sympathy for you.
He can play that way. If he can play effectively that way.
He can't play that way. I mean, that was Tiki. He looked like a 55-year-old playing softball with a keg at second base.
Well, I don't disagree, BT, and I'm not one to fat shame guys, but he looked big.
He looked big. You're a pro athlete. Have a little pride. Now, if there's a medical condition, thyroid, what I mean, then that's one thing. But he's battled that. Whatever. That's not the point. He's put on a lot of weight. Okay, but not good weight. But let's say that right fielder shows up and he's getting ready for spring training. And he goes from 6'3", 215 as a right fielder or a first baseman or a third baseman in late October during the World Series. And when he shows up in February, he's still 6'3", only he's 245 to 250 pounds.
Yep.
Now, given baseball's history, we know the stories that will be associated with that spike in weight. I'm not saying that Bryson DeChambeau is taking steroids by any stretch, but I mean, is it unfair to ask the question, how did you really gain the weight?
Yes and no, because we don't know what his body accepts. You know what I mean? So we know his diet. He's eating 3,500 or so calories a day. He'll have breakfast, then he'll have two protein shakes. Then he'll have lunch, and then he'll have two more protein shakes. He'll have dinner, he'll have two other protein shakes. And this is in addition to working out and lifting weights and getting, you know, muscle activation techniques, like all of these things that are paramount to advanced physical training. And the only reason I bring this up, BT, is because I went through something similar to this. Now, I didn't put on 20 pounds, but I remember between my 2003 and 2004 seasons, I put on about 12 or so pounds and it was muscle, like mm-hmm. solid muscle. I started really working hard with Joe Carini, mm-hmm. who was a world's strongest man, just a character of a dude, had me squatting and deadlifting enormous, you know, ridiculous amounts of weight.
Real quick, how long did it take to put on the 12 pounds?
It took about 3 months.
Go ahead.
So three or so months, but it was every day. Like, first thing I'm doing is getting up every day. First thing I do is get on a squat rack or a press, a leg press machine, laying on my back, pushing up, sometimes it get up to 1,200 pounds, right? Jeez. It was insane, right? And it was like my warm-up, you know what I mean? And so it's like a philosophy. And I'd only do two or three reps, but it was just move the weight. And so you get to the point where you start just being able to move the weight and your body starts to respond. Mm-hmm. And again, I was crushing like eggs and protein shakes and all of these things, and the weight came on, but I stayed functional. And I think that's what Bryson DeChambeau did. The problem is that in today's society, we question everything. Mm-hmm. We question legitimacy.
But when we didn't question baseball's legitimacy, we got taken for fools.
That's true. So that's true.
That's why we kind of do.
I don't disagree. But have we done it in golf? That's the thing.
I'm not even saying it's right. Now, but I do think it's a fair question.
It just hasn't come up. Now,
You move on.
But remember, this came up with Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know how long ago. 10 years ago, 12
Been
years ago.
Been whispers for a long time.
Long time. And because he was working out with he was seeing a doctor up in Canada.
Up in Toronto. Dr. Galileo, I believe, up in Toronto.
I think it was
the name.
Yeah. Something like that.
Galileo? Something like that.
Yeah.
Something with a G and something with a vowel at the end.
That's right. And so, and he was tied to other guys who had done steroids. Yep. And so these questions came up, but it never went anywhere in golf. And I think it might be the answer to your question is just the sport, right? The sport is a gentleman's game, and you don't question, you know, whether or not you think your partner's cheating unless you see him cheating. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Moving his ball or kicking it out of the rough or like you and I do. But it doesn't matter if we cheat. But if you did it on a tour, you know, your reputation is shot. Mm-hmm. And so until there's...
Like Patrick Reed.
That's right.
Has been accused a few times.
That's exactly right. Yep. So until it's like fully like... I don't know, vetted and someone has like concrete proof. Mm-hmm. I think in golf, it's just not going to come up.
I don't mean the players, even though
it's a legitimate question.
I don't mean the players. I mean,
because it's still a, why won't media? Because it's a novelty, right? How many guys do you see that look like that are good? I mean, John Daly was not, I mean, he didn't lift a weight in his life.
No, John was.
He crushed the, 100 beers a day, but he didn't lift a weight in his life. Mm-hmm. Bryson DeChambeau is telling you what he's doing, right? And you can go back to when he was a little player, he's 200 pounds, and he's telling you, this is how I'm going to get big. I'm going to do this. I'm going to work with this doctor who is a muscle activation technique guy. Okay. I need it because my back is jacked up. He said he played his whole last season in pain, and he started lifting weights because he needed to, get rid of the pain by creating more stability. And again, I can relate to that. I jacked up my shoulder. So when I told Carini about it, I was like, dude, my shoulder's hurt. I think I need to lay off on it. He's like, no, we're going to start pounding weight on it. And it made it strong. It made it more stable. And so it depends on the philosophy.
Okay.
Right? So
just wondering if it's a fair question. Gotcha.
I mean, it's always a fair question.
Yeah.
I just don't think I don't think he's doing steroids.
I don't think so either. I'm not saying it's really applicable, but it just the skepticism, the level of skepticism that's permeated, everyone's soul from every angle, seemingly, certainly the last couple of months with everything flared up, has been, it was interesting to me how it has escaped the analysis of Bryson DeChambeau's physical transformation. But don't need to belabor it. I got you. I want to play something for you. This was over. So we chronicled how well he's playing, how good he is for the game. There was a moment, I guess he kind of flared one out of the sand or didn't hit it the way. I mean, you and I would have been thrilled with it, but he wasn't very thrilled with it. A bunker shot. And, I guess he kind of, with his wedge, flicked the sand, and the camera person responsible for filming him kind of kept the camera locked in on him as he was acting a little bit, below board in terms of professionalism, certainly in golf. And Bryson was then chirping at him, and it led to this after the round. This is on Saturday, not Sunday. Go ahead, guys.
There was something that happened. I mean, nothing crazy, but I had a cameraman that was filming me after I had a bad bunker shot and whiffed the sand a little bit, which shouldn't have done. That was dumb. But at the end of the day, he was literally watching me the whole entire way up, after getting out of the bunker, walking up next to the green. And I just was like, sir, what is the need to watch me that long? I mean, I understand that. It's his job to video me. But at the same point, I think we need to start protecting our players out here compared to showing a potential vulnerability and hurting someone's image. I just don't think that's necessarily the right thing to do. Not like I was going to do anything bad. It's just it's one of those things that I hope he respects, you know, my privacy as much as we're out here performing. I think it's necessary that we have our times of privacy as well when things aren't going our way. I mean, we're in the spotlight, and if somebody else is in the spotlight, they wouldn't want that either. You know, it's just something about respect.
Okay, I got to be honest with you. I think that that's such a ridiculous take, and I'm going to tell you why. Number one, it's insincere in this respect. It's, you know, it's a two-way street. And if you want to use the media to help, you know, illuminate these majestic, prodigious 370-yard drives, and you want the cameras there when you're talking about your caloric intake and your off-season activity and your physical transformation, you know what? When you do something that a 9-year-old kid probably does, and you have to expect – now, I'm not looking to bury him. It's not a huge deal. But it is an early sign that he could have a little bit of a rough transition to this newfound fame that is invariably going to come his way.
Yeah.
Because if he – let me just finish one. If he thinks that there's pressure at the Rocket Mortgage Classic with no fans there in Detroit, Michigan – wait till he starts playing Augusta, and he's the featured group, and the U.S. Open, and Ryder Cups. He's got to learn that the camera's your friend, and it's your foe, and you have to always know that it's on, period.
Yeah, I agree. Look, now, he's been in the spotlight for a long time. He was a U.S. amateur champion as well as NCAA champion when he was 17 years old. Like, he's the mad scientist. Everybody talks about his clubs, which are all cut to the 7-iron height. He's been doing that since he was 17 years old. Like, the analytics of the game are what make him who he is. And I can only talk, because I played with him, as BT mentioned, a couple of times, and he was great. I had such an unbelievable time just chatting with him about, like, golf, but also science and philosophy and things of that nature. I can only chalk this up, because I know him personally, as a bad moment. He was frustrated, and he wanted to do something with his game, and he wasn't working, and this guy was trying to capture it. Yep. I get it. He probably should apologize as opposed to expounding upon it. But that's for a later date, I think.
That's my bigger issue, though. Not flipping this flick in the sand. Mm-hmm. It's that he thought that, like, the arrogance post-round, after all that time to let it sit, that he still thought that he had a license to lay that on the camera person.
Yeah.
That was my bigger gripe. Not that he flicked the sand. You know? We'll see. Must watch. No doubt. And a great weekend and a bit of an odd weekend. But we'll give him a pass. We'll see where it goes. Third hour coming up.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.